Are you an emerging or executive leader in the fintech and SaaS space? Are you looking for an opportunity to stay up to date with the latest trends, news, and insights from the world's top leaders? Welcome to Strategy Supercharged, where every episode we will deep dive with some of the world's top leaders to help you understand what you need to know in order to create the change that you need in your organization. Thank you for joining us.
Right. Hi, everyone. I'm Fawn Hudgens from Digital Wise, and today we are talking to Daphne Costa-Lopez, and I've been looking forward to this conversation. Daphne is the director of the UK, Ireland, and EMEA Strategic Account Success Teams. That is a lot at HubSpot. And unless you've been living under a rock, you obviously know that HubSpot is a market-leading CRM provider and much, much more. Daphne helps the company she works with achieve 130% plus NRR. So she is definitely someone you will want to be taking notes from. I'm really looking forward to the conversation. And so Daphne, welcome to Strategy Supercharged.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here to share some tips and tricks with your audience and hopefully just be able to highlight some of the great work that the teams at HubSpot are doing.
Absolutely. So we're here to talk about customer success strategy. This is your area of expertise, your passion. Talk me through that eureka moment that you had back in 2011, I think it was, about CS and why this area is even more vital in today's world.
Yeah. To kind of bring everybody back in time a little, in the early 2000s, like customer success was just not seen as a revenue driving department. It was very much a strategy or a tactic that companies put together to help customers adopt the product. And, you know, it used to be seen as like the happiness department. That was a time when, you know, there was a chief happiness officer in some companies, you know.
I remember that.
Yeah. So it was a time when like customer success just wasn't seen as the revenue driver. You know, keep customers happy and they're going to stay with us. So you were the nice guys, right? You're just like trying to please the customer in any way, shape, or form and give them a great experience. But we weren't talking about the really vital impact that customer success had, which was one in the bottom line, driving retention, but also in creating opportunities for customers to purchase more from your company. So the growth aspect of customer success just wasn't really a thing. For example, nowadays, customer success qualified leads are pretty much a standard in the mature customer success organizations and companies that do have multiple products that have a land and expand type of strategy. However, at the time, like that just wasn't the thing. You had an account manager. They were responsible for hunting opportunities within the install base, or at least you had a sales rep that was responsible for a portion of the install base and did that work. So it was 2011, and I was part of the founding team of a startup that really saw the value in customer success as the driver of a revenue target. So we always talked about like the power of customer success to drive the retention number. But it was only when we started realizing from a qualitative perspective that our customers are coming back to us and they were trusting us with bigger strategic problems when we delivered value to them. They were coming to us and saying, hey, we have this other department that's trying to do this thing. Like, what would you recommend? And we were then able to match them with solutions that we had inside the organization that, you know, were a good fit for their business, that solved a real problem. And because they trusted us already, we were able to convert that revenue in much higher rates, but we weren't tracking any of this. This was all kind of qualitative and we were observations. So we created this mechanism of tracking those opportunities. Again, at the time we created the success qualified lead in our business for the first time. And we were like, okay, those are real opportunities that we're creating. Now let's track how they close, the value of those opportunities. And it was really at that point that it was that, like you said, the eureka moment of saying, wow, there is real revenue power here. And it's not, it's not insignificant. It's actually pretty big. And again, nowadays you look at revenue retention numbers. Revenue retention just wasn't a target that people looked at the time, but you know, you see 110, 120%. You're seeing double-digit growth coming solely from the install base. And that is fantastic. Like if you yeah. never sold to another customer and your business was still growing by double digits, wouldn't that better be than brilliant? Fine. So yeah. So that was the eureka moment there. And like I said, it was at a time when it felt like it was pushing water up the hill. It resonated deeply with leaders, like with senior leadership, because in their gut, they obviously made the investment in customer success. They knew that there was value in there. And anything that brings revenue is obviously good news for leaders. So it resonated deeply, but it felt like pushing water up a hill in terms of getting everybody in the organizations behind this idea, because mm-hmm. it was very much seen as, well, that's a sales job. That's not like, you know, there's not a customer success job. Just go and make customers happy. That pushback was there for a long time. But now I feel like everybody has caught up and we're all talking about revenue retention. We're all talking about gross retention and customer outcomes, which is a really big passion of mine as well. Probably my next eureka moment that I'll write about one day will be the day I realized that, having a metric for customer outcomes was actually the best leading indicator of GRR or NRR. But yeah, that was the eureka moment. And I've literally everything I've done since has been based on that belief and the evidence that customer success is a revenue driving force for a business.
Well, it's interesting because you mentioned, and this is off script, so forgive me, but you mentioned like this was for kind of more mature organizations that had, quite a lot of products to spend. You know, we're seeing this earlier and earlier that, we're kind of advising founders, you need to go to market with a retention strategy. Would you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. We have to remember that retention, net retention is built out of four motions. Cancellations, right? Like all customers that are leaving altogether. Customers that are downgrading, who are not leaving your product altogether, but are not feeling like they got enough value to stay in the current investment that they have, or just not able to afford it. And then you have the positive motions, which is upsells and cross-sells. And upsells, again, depending on your pricing strategy, might be independent of having new products, because you might have a pricing strategy that grows as customer consumption grows or their team size grows, etc. So you might not actually have a need to put a new product in the market to be able to upgrade customers. And then you have cross-sells, which is obviously dependent on having more products to sell to that customer. So those four things, cancellations, downgrades, upgrades, and cross-sells, they all are inside what we would call a retention strategy, because retention is both net retention, but also gross retention. So I would agree with you. If I was starting a business today, obviously my first concern would be to get customers. Yeah, that would be my number one priority, because I'm a new business. I need to find market fit. I need to prove to the world that my business and my product solves a real product need, that people are willing to pay for it. So that would be my number one concern. But as soon as I have customers, my next concern is, how do I keep them? How do I grow them? So yeah, I think founders or early stage startups should absolutely have a retention strategy. The question is, like, what part of those four levers do you focus most on when depending on your maturity? So I would say everybody would probably start with a defense concern, right? Just like, how do I defend this revenue that I now have? So having a strategy to prevent cancellations, to prevent downgrades, I think that would be my first concern as a founder. And then next, it would be, depending, as I said, as the pricing strategy, et cetera, it would be, how can I expand them? So I would have probably a roadmap of, like, year one priorities, year two priorities, but retention is essential.
Yes. So you've also talked about this kind of internal piece. And we work with a lot of founders, a lot of startups. We find that even if we give them the right tools, we give them the right playbooks, the greatest roadblock is often internal culture. And you're saying, we know now we need to align, but we find that alignment piece is probably the trickiest. In your experience, how do you tackle that? And how do you advise CS teams and leaders to kind of navigate this?
You know, it's super interesting because I've worked in CS organizations of all shapes. I've worked in CS orgs that reported into product, that reported into sales, that had their own customer success leader. So I think the where your reporting line really does matter. It's not just a frivolity, you know, it's like, oh, it doesn't matter where CS is as long as it exists. I think aligning the reporting line with the place where it makes most sense for your business. I obviously am a big fan of having customer success as a standalone, at least a post-sales function, you know, like let's say a complete, we call it success in HubSpot, everything that's post-sales, including services, professional services, et cetera. So I love that model because I think it truly gives customer success a seat on the table as equals to sales, as equals to product. So I am a big fan of this model. However, I think, you know, smaller companies, you're not going to hire like 10 leaders to, you know, at the very start. You want to be able to roll things under a existing leader. So in those models, like I'm really a big fan of either rolling into go-to-market, so a sales a marketing kind of function, or rolling under operations for the operational rigor that's required to drive retention. So those are my kind of two favorite models. And I think that having leaders that buy into the vision of customer success, like this is actually my biggest advice to people who are building careers in customer success. You know, if you are out there, and you know, you're passionate about customer success, I personally would go and find a company that's also passionate about customer success, that also values customer success. Because again, like solving the problem of retention, solving the problem of driving value for customers is a much more interesting problem than solving the problem of trying to convince your business that they should care about this. That's just my opinion. I know that there are plenty of companies out there that are still walking that journey of understanding the value. And there are plenty of leaders out there that are trying to sell the value of customer success to their organizations, or in this climate, even protect the value. You know, maybe they're trying to reduce costs, reduce headcount. So what I would say, it's like alignment is all about being able to have the right evidence, right? Mm-hmm. You're not just saying this works. You can show people that it works. You can give them the facts, the figures, the numbers, the examples, the stories. So it's not just your word, it's the reality. And you can use both what's happening inside your company to show that, but you can also show what's happening outside in the world. And you can have examples of companies that are doing this very well. And I think the CS community is really open to sharing that kind of information. So I would say that's number one. And then the other thing is like understanding the priorities of the business, the strategy, the motivations of the leaders, and speaking in the language that resonates with them. So you go to your sales leader who is perhaps concerned about growth in the next year, quotas, targets. If you want to convince them that customer success is a good strategy, like find a way to have a conversation about the success QLs you can bring to them and how those QLs are going to contribute to their targets and how that will make it easier for reps to close deals. You make it faster for reps to close deals. So really find the talk track that resonates with the other person versus trying to get them to care about things that you care about. For example, it might be that you're trying to tell them that is the right thing to do for the customer, but that's not resonating with them. Like find what they care about, find what the business priority is, find the metric that they are measured on, and find a way to connect customer success to that. And I think that that's like the baseline of alignment, having evidence and knowing how to make the message resonate with the right audience.
Yes, yes, I hear this. What are kind of the biggest pitfalls, or perhaps the better question is, what's your biggest bugbear when you're working with companies on their CS strategy and they're, you know, this is kind of new for them and you're building this out? What big mistakes are they making and what really, really bothers you? You just see time and again, and you're like, come on, guys, come on.
Well, I said at the start that I was going to talk about my next Eureka moment one day. And it is customer outcomes. And for me, one of the biggest gaps in customer success today is the ability to prove that your product is having a positive effect in your customer's organization, is proving value to your customer. I cannot tell you how many times I sit across CS leaders and I say to them, like, okay, you're making a market promise. You are saying you help improve productivity. How do you measure that? How do you know you're improving this year on year? How do you know your processes, your playbooks are helping customers get there? And the answer is usually question mark face, worried face. Not a lot of people have that. And there is this almost, it's like a hot potato. Like, customer success is looking at product and saying, this is your job, right? It's your product. You tell me how I measure this. And then product is saying, well, tell me what your customers care about. Like, what? How are they measuring this? And then, you know, it keeps going back and forward. And then CS maybe passes it on to sales and says, like, what are you promising customers? What did they say that they wanted at the very start? Like, tell us what those goals are. And you have everybody passing on the hot potato of the customer outcome without actually doing anything to go and solve it. And I think that, and to go back to the conversation of alignment, like, you can't have customer outcomes that are exclusive customer success related, right? So it's not just customer success measures, customer outcomes like that. Is the organization measures customer outcomes like this. What are the two or three metrics that back up the promises we're making to the market? And honestly, I think that is my biggest pet peeve, is seeing customer success driving internal metrics without knowing whether the things that they're driving actually having a positive impact in the customer. Because ultimately, the reason why customers stay with us, the reason why they upgrade and trust us with more of their business, is because we've been able to deliver on the promises that we've made. And until we're able to demonstrate that and communicate that, it will be very hard to move the needle in retention.
We have to be measuring what we do. Absolutely. So take me through some of maybe one of your biggest career challenges. I can imagine that your journey here has not been, you know, sunshine and rainbows over the last decade, not entirely anyway. Can you give an example of a strategy or a tactic that maybe hasn't worked so well? What did you learn from it? How did you course correct on that?
Gosh, countless mistakes. I mean, being a leader is like being in day one in school every day. You know, you're just continuously being challenged and learning, which is honestly why I love the career that I've chosen. You know, it's one of the parts that I genuinely adore about my job. I would say, I say this a lot, like, the best decisions I've made have been the people I hired, but the worst decisions I made were the people I hired. So, as a leader, like, you live or die based on the team you build. And I would say, like, one of my biggest career challenges has been, I'm an extremely empathetic person. And in so many cases, I've accepted mediocre performance because I felt bad for the other person. I felt bad because they had a family, they had a mortgage to pay, they had commitments, etc. I just felt bad. But in trying to be kind, I was actually bringing the standard of the team down and actually letting our customers down. So I was creating a ripple effect and a problem that just wasn't necessary, you know. And I've become much better at, one, setting expectations very, very clearly at the start for people, holding people to a very high standard, delivering the right support to help people get there, but also making peace with the fact that when people don't get there, it's my job as a leader to help them find a path that's more suitable for them. So I think that that's like something I've had to learn over the years. And it doesn't come naturally. I don't think it comes naturally to anybody to do that, as like a learned skill. So that is definitely one. And then the other piece I would say that I still struggle with, and but I feel like I'm struggling in different ways and less, so I'm learning, I'm growing, is change management. Change management has been a the core of actually the reason why I chose the career in customer success, I was in the receiving end of multiple failed product implementations because change management was done poorly. And I observed that and I said, you know, there's a better way to do this, that there has to be a better way to do this. And I kind of got knees deep into change management theory. And like I said, it was the reason why I went into customer success in the first place. So it's a passion of mine, but it's hard. It's very, very hard, especially because as a business, you want to move quickly, right? So you make a decision about strategy. You probably spend a lot of time thinking about the inputs for that strategy. But once you make that decision, you want to get up and run. You want to get going. And the reality is that you need the whole business to follow you when you make that call. And that takes a lot of work from a communication perspective, but also like understanding individuals and their motivations and then positive reinforcement. Like there were so many times where I fell into the negative, everything that we weren't doing right, that we needed to get right without doing the right positive reinforcement for people, et cetera. So I have to say that I've stumbled and failed so many times to drive changing the way that I would like to, because I either was trying to rush this process because I wanted to move fast.
I hear this.
Or because, or because I completely ignored people's emotional sides. You know, I think we tend to be in business very metrics driven, and here's the evidence, here's the data, and then ask ourselves, why are people not following this? Is like the logic thing to do. We told them that it's good, we told them that it works, but that emotional side of the softer messages, the positive reinforcement, like that's just so critical. So I am still learning. Like I said, it's not something that I've mastered and I can sit here and say, here's, I'm brilliant at this, I've overcome it. It's absolutely not, but I have improved a lot. And the challenges I'm encountering now are maybe different than the ones that I was encountering early in my career. So I would say for anybody that's pursuing a career in customer success, which is a department where there's a lot of change, because you experience change in your organization, change in your customer's organization, in the product, you know, it's a lot of, you're in the receiving end of a lot of change that you can't control as well. So I would say, like, get familiar and comfortable with change and how to manage it. That's an advice I'll give.
So tough. It's a high challenge. So on the flip side of that, has there been a certain initiative that's kind of won above the odds? You know, what was the outcome? What were the factors that contributed to a really outstanding success?
I love that question. I mean, over the years, different things have worked for my teams. But one thing that I'm really passionate right now, because of the environment that we're in, which is we're trying to scale. In HubSpot, we have over 200,000 customers. So you can imagine like how to deliver success at that rate is very different than when you're in a small company environment or when you just work with a small number of enterprises. So it's a lot of customers. So scaling is always, always on my mind. And I think it's relevant for everybody as well. Like with the economic challenges, the layoffs, everybody's trying to do more or less. That's the mantra at the moment. So I think one of the plays that has worked really, really well for me and my teams in the last year was taking on marketing principles in order to nurture customers and really think about like content strategy, distribution channels, metrics that would reflect like whether customers are learning and adopting that. We call them growth plays at HubSpot. We identify customers programmatically that would be a good fit for being nurtured towards a specific path based on their product mix, their how long they've been with HubSpot, their behavior in the product, their objectives. We identify them programmatically and we enroll them into learning paths with the objective of growing them. So it's definitely a upgrade and cross-sell type of motion that we drove with that. And what we've seen is that it's that nurturing piece, like actually getting the customer to self-serve with that content and get familiar with it ahead of having a conversation about you know, a product that we're positioning for them specifically, that really helps with just growing customers. And we were able to create a huge amount of success qualified leads that converted at a really high rate, that had a good average selling price, because we were nurturing customers at scale towards those outcomes. So that's, I think, one of the most successful plays that I've run my teams over the last few years. And honestly, HubSpot has like fantastic resources. We have an entire customer success operations team that's consistently innovating, rolling out AI tools for CSMs internally, leveraging machine learned models to help us scale better and identify customers who are at risk or really healthy. So I have to say that like having that that partner in CS operations is, I find myself, I feel very lucky that I have that as a CS leader.
But I also love this idea that, you know, we're learning from our colleagues, we're working cross-functionally to, you know, share our knowledge. And really, I mean, it totally makes sense that you would nurture existing customers in the same way that you're trying to get potential customers in. So
yeah.
I love that. Over the last few years, are there any ideas, behaviors, habits that you've either added or removed from your life that's improved the outcomes that you've seen at work?
Great question. Yes, the answer is absolutely. I've changed a lot in terms of like how I organize myself, how I structure my weeks. I think a few things that I always share with people I mentor is pay yourself first in your day. Right. As soon as you open your inbox, especially as a leader, and also as a CSM, you suddenly have everyone else's priority in front of you. Right. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes what that means is you have that important stuff that you know you need to do because it's going to have a big impact in your number, in your team, in your customers. But you never get to it because as soon as you get into your desk and you open your email, you're working on other people's priorities and you are in meetings and you just don't have the time. And by the time the day comes to the end, you are burned. You just want to turn off the laptop, get outside, spend time with your family. You don't want to be doing that creative work that's challenging, that requires you to think deeply. So pay yourself first, put that stuff early in your calendar, even if it means like coming into work 15 minutes early, not opening your emails until 9:30. You have 45 minutes to sit down and say, okay, this is like my thinking time,
my time.
Yeah. So that I have that religiously in my day. Like that's how I start every single one of my days. And yeah, I always recommend it. Then the other thing is everybody thinks my entire life is customer success because I'm in HubSpot. I do a board advisory. I do a bit of consulting. I write a newsletter. I'm like, people think that all I do in life is customer success, which I'm happy to say it's not. I do have a life outside and I do things. And that is a huge part of actually having the energy to bring your best self to work is filling your cup. And I fill my cup by spending time outside, exercising, having nights with my friends and getting to chat about things that are not work related whatsoever, traveling. So fill your cup is another big advice I have for people. How I do that. I have a quarterly slot in my calendar, which is like my quarterly holiday. And I go and I know I'm very fortunate and privileged. I want to say that not everybody globally has the same holiday policies as Europe and as HubSpot. We have an unlimited holiday policy, which is, I have to say, I do take advantage of that. And so I know I'm talking from a place of privilege, but whatever your holiday policies are, find a way to regularly take time off away from your desk, away from your laptop. And the reason why I have a quarterly on my calendar is because unless it's in my calendar, it's not happening, right? So unless I have the week blocked, there's no important meetings, I haven't accepted any commitments, I'm not speaking in any conference, unless it's there, it's not happening. So what I do is there, usually early in the quarter, I go, I add that time in, And then I can start planning to do something fun, whether that is an adventure. I just came back from hiking Mount Kilimanjaro in December.
Oh, wow.
Or whether that is something simple. You know, I'm just going to stay at home and I'm going to, you know, go to the gym and I'm going to hang out with my friends. Like, no matter what I'm doing, it's going to be outside of my laptop, outside of my day job, outside of customer success. And then I bake in, you know, my own time. Like, I have, if you look at my calendar, like, my exercise time is on my calendar. Yes. And, you know, my yoga is on my calendar. So I'm saying this because if it's not in your calendar, you're going to put things over it and you're going to tell yourself that's okay. Oh, it's just tonight. I'm just going to work late tonight. Oh, it's another night. Well, now I'm too tired. And then you just don't do it. So find ways to fill your cup, whatever that means to you. For me, it's being going outside, exploring, having adventures, working out. But for you, it might be totally different. It might be family time, or it might be arts and crafts, whatever that is. Find time in your calendar, put in there, and respect that time. Because I think the other thing is that people sometimes put the time in, and then when the time comes, they just do something else on top of it.
And I think every leader needs to hear that, because otherwise you just work constantly. You know, there's always something that needs to be done, always. Mm-hmm. So as a wrap up, what is your one big takeaway from this? Like, if you're going to talk to CS leader, founder, you know, what advice would you give them?
My biggest advice would be, as a customer success leader, your job is to deliver value for customers and know and prove that that is value for the business too, right? So it's like this win-win-win scenario. Make sure that whether you are in a startup or you are in a Fortune 500 company, that you're consistently putting the customer at the center of everything that you do. And like I said, finding ways to connect that back to the value that the business is getting so that everyone in the chain understands the impact of the customer success team.
Wonderful. Daphne, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and your insights with us. This has been Strategy Supercharged, and we will see you soon.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Strategy Supercharged. And if you are looking for an opportunity to connect with your fellow executive and emerging leaders, check us out at strategysupercharged.com and join the community.